would take for
Location of Lindsey Graham's spine. What?
So, it's a diagram of which part of the spine. This is more related to Lindsey Graham saying in 2016, in like an almost boondocks way, like, if in 2020 there was a Republican incumbent president, he's like literally describing this exact moment of what
right,
he would
that's
say.
Right. That's right. So that way Obama wouldn't get to nominate a justice. Solid.
Yeah. He put his chips in earlier back then, so now he's got to pay up.
Now he's got to pay up. You got to pay your taxes. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is episode 158, and we've got some music for you. No singles, because, you know,
we're rounding out kind of like the end of September, exactly. Getting into the rush of October,
so
music-wise.
We're going to review two albums. We have Detroit 2 by Big Sean, which came out at the beginning of this month. And we have American Head by The Flaming Lips. And then we're going to do our little music recommendations. We're going to recommend two artists each, so four in total. So that way you guys get some music in there, because there's, I wouldn't say it's like super light on news, but there's only a couple stories, but there's a lot to talk about within those stories.
Yes. Because we are going to head right into news, no singles, I'll just do the announcements right now.
Yeah.
Power Report, if you are missing an episode recently, there was an episode last week that's in the Power Report feed. Make sure you check that out at powerreport.world. to get the subscription links everywhere you want them to go, or on my YouTube page at youtube.com/danfromtheinternet. We had a Kendrick bonus on Audio Face side of things. Check that out. That's episode 157 or 156 bonus. I don't know. It's a couple episodes back. Check that out. Kendrick Lamar is going to be releasing something soon. Don't know when it's going to happen, but it'll happen soon. We have more bonus episodes coming out this year. We have two original ones that haven't been done yet, a Beba Doobie one and the Avalanches. And then
right. We're
going to have a recap one of Gorillaz, and including all the other special Audio Face things coming up the rest of the year. Court packing episode, the Audio Face Awards, all that stuff. So make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss any of it.
Yeah.
Well,
let's dive at first.
This is going second. Straight in. Yeah.
So Cardi B filed divorce from Offset. Offset. Again. So I guess she went to the Atlanta courthouse, court packing, and said that it was
irreconcilable differences.
I can't say that's a word. That is not.
Yes.
Not
Cardi
work,
B and Offset married in September 2017 in a kind of low key affair that we kind of knew was happening because they were dating. Interesting. Offset admitted to being unfaithful after the evidence was shown out in public.
And he did the whole, like, apologize Cardi, the most cringy thing ever, and that's why he got nominated for the No Little Bitch Award.
Yeah, that's why he won the No Little Bitch Award.
Oh, sorry, yeah, he was a nominated.
The Kendall Chiari Cephas No Little Bitch Award, which we didn't get enough use out of that, honestly, but...
It's like, that's a mouthful.
He did the
mouthful.
Whole thing where he tried to apologize to Cardi B at one of her concerts.
Yes.
That was really
and like
cringe.
Did
showing
like
flowers
a whole flower display and everything. Cardi looked at him like, you better get your ass off stage right now before
yeah.
I beat you up.
And very much Offset seemed like the, what would I call it, like the footstool kind of husband for the past year and a half, just like showing up in the back of Cardi B's Instagram live, just like, here I'm holding your flowers, here I'm holding the kid, here I'm holding your makeup, here I'm holding your bag, here I'm holding your other bag. It's just like, Cardi B's very much in the I'm tolerating you kind of a relationship, and apparently that's
just,
over.
Just
so,
over. So, you know, wop.
If there are any other notable men in hip-hop or R&B or in sports or whatever who want to take their chances with that... We'll see what happens, but I think this is probably going to be that's the end of Offset's career for sure. I mean, that's the end of Migos. I mean, like, Migos is already in a downhill already.
Yeah, exactly. They've
everyone can safely issues. Consider that, like, there's a lot of allegations on the Takeoff side, there's weird shit going on the Quavo and Offset side. It just seems like their careers are on a downhill, and this is going to be kind of the latest moment in that.
Lambo!
Sucks. Did there even some other people who were saying the older Migos stuff, even before the Culture series, was better, like back when they were doing mixtapes and
mixtapes,
things. Like,
yeah.
I can get with that. None of it was really that great, though. Ha.
So TikTok is avoiding a shutdown. They had an 11th-hour deal with Oracle and Walmart.
Walmart.
That's hilarious. Because Trump was like, you all aren't going to be able to download it starting today. But then they, like, literally within like an hour of it going to be shut down. They signed a deal.
Yeah, Oracle, they are just like
Oracle Sports Arena.
Yes, they are just like, we know them for their sports arenas. They're a software company, mostly for business to other business software things, so nothing you would really know about. I think Oracle actually owns Java, which is a popular scripting language used to build a lot of things on the internet.
Yeah.
And
I didn't know they own Java. That's interesting.
they're not exactly a Facebook or a Google in that they own any sort of like modern consumer-facing operating system service, but Java is underlying for a lot of the things we use. I think a
So
lot
there's
of
Java,
Android used to be
JavaScript and stuff.
Java-based for a
Yeah.
while. Yeah, in fact, that might be a touchy thing because I remember Oracle and Google were having lawsuits over Android a while ago. Anyways,
Didn't know that.
yeah, it turns out Walmart is also purchasing a stake in it as well, just to make it extra American. Again, this would be like if Target bought Instagram.
Yeah,
It just like
seriously.
straight doesn't make a lot of sense. But neither did this whole thing. There still need to be some extra little things eked out in the deal. So the TikTok is not completely out of the woods
It's going to
yet.
be called TikTok Global, though. Or they're
The
making a
company's
new
going to be called
entity. Yeah.
TikTok Global, and it's going to like be on the stock exchange and everything. It's actually definitely sets a weird precedent politics-wise that like a president can decide this foreign company is now an American company. And it just sort of lets it happen. I don't think they're going to want to try to let this continue to happen again,
It's just
but
like, it's just, there's so much shady, weird shit that goes on with that.
yeah, this does continue to be a place where music
Yo, for
blossoms a
sure. Because
lot,
people are like,
and
oh, I heard, oh, that's a TikTok song, which is still, whoever says that, you need to check your life real quick. But like, oh, that's a TikTok song.
mean, it's interesting. Like, it's a song that people associate with being on
Yeah.
TikTok, especially in the memes. So it's interesting how the internet's just like siloed into all these different worlds, and we experience it all differently like that. But that is how it usually
That is
goes.
that. And we're gonna move on to our first album review of the day. We have Detroit 2 by Big Sean. It is 21 songs, an hour and 11 minutes long. It came out on the 4th of September. So we had some other albums and stuff that we were reviewing first. So now we get to go over ahead to this. I have a lot of positives out of this album, actually. I think there's a lot of good. My only downturn is he pulled the Matty Healy of just like put a lot of fucking songs into here, and some of it weren't cohesive to other ones. And some kind of filler random shit in here, so it made it ridiculously long. I remember I was listening to it on the bike this morning, like finishing it up. I'm like, this, it's still going. Okay,
Yeah.
we're still, I looked at my phone, still going.
I will
Okay.
say not to skip across the whole thing, but the next to like the third to, well, next to last song, Friday Night
The Friday Night
Cypher,
Cypher,
is
yeah.
a 10-minute long cypher.
Yeah, and
So
it just like has so many features. Like, how many features does that song have?
yeah,
Yeah,
but like that's
like,
a cypher. That's how it goes.
exactly.
Just like a bunch of rap artists getting together to do like a 10-minute song. That's just how it goes. So like if you take out that little almost like bonus thing,
It
it's an
was hour
hour long of an
long,
album.
20 minutes,
Still on the
20
longer side,
songs.
and I still think a lot of what you're saying with the filler is definitely there.
Yeah, because you
Even,
have like
yeah.
some random stuff like Story by Dave Chappelle, you have
Erykah
Story by
Badu and
Erykah
Stevie
Badu
Wonder,
and
they'd have
Stevie
these little
Wonder. Yeah.
interludes where they're kind of talking about Detroit. Detroit 2 is a reference to Detroit 1, which is a Big Sean mixtape from the earlier 10s. And all these are kind of like love, you know, like all rappers do this at a certain point, like a love letter to
Their
the area they
city,
came up in
yeah.
this case being Detroit. So, of course, you have appearances from Eminem and others like throughout here in this. But getting into the beginning of the album, which you said, yeah, we haven't seen a lot of great things, like full-out rap projects come out this
This is
year, really.
pretty good.
So, yeah, this is good.
Why would I stop? It starts off, and that's like a good trap song. Like, that's a solid trap song. I really like the beginning of it, and because it's like a slow little into like beginning phase, and it gets into trap, and it's nothing super cliche or anything, but it's a solid trap song. It's short, gets to the point, gets you hyped up and everything for it, and you feel good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I can get on board with this.
It's fine. It's
It's like,
passable to me. Like, it's
exactly.
not super offensive, but like, it's definitely not any sort of like glitzy, I'm gonna get attention drawn to it kind of thing.
No, and then right after that's Lucky Me, which then is more of your hip-hop style.
Lucky me. Precious what I eat. Ain't no roses at my feet. Just the blood on the concrete. Look, the mission is covered. I stuck to the code and you don't know the code word. Once they start me up, then just know that it's over. My soul is on solar, surrounded by angels and soldiers on soldiers. World turn me cold, gang turn me colder. Sitting course, I lookin' like I'm finna be the fucking future owner. Cup runneth over and she coming over and she told me that her little bro wanna beat me when he older.
Look, I ain't gon' hold you up. Put in my family, I feel like utopia. Falling in love with this slut is my phobia. My whole scene first class, so it ain't no culture. That's water, don't go there. Now slow down, little brody. I know you don't know me. I'm buffed in my chest up. I feel like Hulk Hogan.
It's like, that's not one nice thing I like about this album, is it mixes hip-hop, rap, and trap. Where it's not like Future's album earlier, where it's just like every single song has the same fucking beat 45 times. There are a couple of stuff with Young Thug and Travis Scott, which I still think Travis Scott's the most overrated rapper in the game right now because it's bad. But anyways, I'll get to that in a little bit. I like Lucky Me a lot because it's talking about how lucky he is to be in a position he is, all the stuff that he's had, like different things within his life. I really enjoy that song a lot. And then you have Deep Reverence with Nipsey Hussle, and it's a little bit of an homage to the late Nipsey Hussle. There's an interesting part in there where he said he tried to get Kendrick on the song, and he said that Kendrick didn't want to, or something like that.
Oh, no. So it's more like Kendrick and Big Sean have had this like supposed beef or whatever.
Yeah.
And a lot of about what Nipsey Hussle and the Deep Reverence song is about is just like some of the beef shit that you have in life. It's just like life's too short to have that kind of thing. Nipsey Hussle's untimely demise being part of that. But the interlude of the song is that like, yeah, I end up calling up Kendrick because supposedly we had beef, but turns out it was nothing. We were just like talking past each other, and so we're cool. So
that's good.
There's nothing about that there. They weren't on any songs or anything like that. But yeah, a lot of times, especially in the music industry, beef is created in the media space when there doesn't need to be. And then there are a lot of artists that we talk about, like 6ix9ine, who love that on purpose and use it to boost their careers. And then that bubble pops and it gets kind of funny.
And but then you gotta sell your albums on the streets.
Very funny. Yes.
Wolves with Post Malone is decent, I think. I actually like Post Malone's feature in this a lot, which normally Post Malone's either good or really shitty to me in a lot of his features. But this one's awesome. I like where it starts with Big Sean. Trap beat's decent into it, and then it gets into Post Malone's part, and I think they complement each other very well. Body Language with Ty Dolla $ign and Jhené Aiko I think is also really good. I think there's a couple of features of Ty Dolla $ign I've heard this year that have actually been decent too. So it's good. And then you have the story by Dave Chappelle, which is, you know, the little 2-minute filler thing of him talking about Detroit and other stuff. I'm like, okay, that's all right.
And at least it helps like break up the album a little bit. I find it to be more useful.
I think it's more later useful in the album. Later. Yeah. You didn't need it to be there per se if you wanted there.
Yeah, but I guess it's got to go somewhere if you have like three of these. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are decent. There's a couple other good songs like "Guard Your Heart" with Anderson .Paak. Early Mac and Whale is a pretty solid song.
With as far as the sound goes, like because I started realizing this especially around "Harder Than My Demons," but like. What Big Sean is doing here that is like kind of good is that he is kind of doing a little bit of an homage to a lot of the more popular beats and styles in trap music. Like Harder Than My Demons has Mike Will Made It on it, and it sounds a lot like a really poppy Drake song. Actually, even in the way that Big Sean sort of like does the intonation of the rapping, he's not like any sort of artist to copy a flow particularly, but it's very similar. But it's just that one song as opposed to Drake just continually doing it all the time.
Exactly.
Because, I forget what song that was, but it was another one of like Drake's super viral songs. There's like some dance to it, but it sounds very similar to that.
Tootsie Slide?
Yeah, yes. It's a very similar sort of like fast drum beat to that. But there are interesting things that happen with the drums as you move in later to the album. There's an uncredited Travis Scott,
ZTFO, I guess, right?
In Zen the Fuck Out, ZTFO. Yeah,
ZTFO.
In the middle, which is like.
Because I heard it and it was just like, yeah! I'm like, he's back. Yeah, there it like, is.
Surprise Travis is the worst Travis Scott. You don't necessarily want that.
It is. That's what I was going to say. Because ZTFO, because before that's Everything That's Missing with Dwelly. And I'm like, okay, that's an okay song. And then you just get Surprise Scott. And I'm like, God damn.
Yeah.
It. I'm like, okay, here we go. And it's just. Sounds like 2018. It's nothing changed, nothing special about it. Eat some McDonald's with it if you want, but it's,
Guard Your Heart with Anderson .Paak, your kind of typical, almost like Corday style, sort of jazzy, sort of R&B interlude over with modern rap and poetry kind of sounding. It's really nice.
And it's nice. Respect It with Hit-Boy and Young Thug is actually pretty good. I like Young Thug's part in there. Again, I really like him as a feature, not as a solo artist. Some themes like Kid Cudi.
Playing with the out-of-sync, out-of-tune style in trap music that we've seen over the past 2 years. Lithuania with Travis Scott. Here's the part where I think is really interesting, because it begins with a very traditional, like, actual drum set in the music itself before continuing to more of a trap style kind of thing.
X's and O's and interchange, hit three in a row, that's just a game.
rings in a row, all down my fingers, I can't even hold my baggage claim.
I think that's really kind of interesting for this project production-wise. I like when a lot of trap songs lend to the drums and lend them to older alternative sounding things that way, because I think there's a lot of natural blend between the two. I think we've even talked about artists who, like Aminé, who are able to blend trap and alternative, especially in the drums, very well. And this is a really good example of that, at least in the beginning. So good unto whoever produced Lithuania on that. But I think the best quality of this album overall is that it doesn't overstep itself in what it's doing.
No.
It stays modern, and a lot of what's going on in rap and trap right now in modern is kind of annoying. But even all these features that are on here, they never complement or overpower the song. It's always making the song better. It's making the project better. Big Sean's good on his own. He's very lyrically skilled.
Like some of his song, like The Baddest, that was just him. Fantastic song. I really like it. I can't go lightly. I feel like Pac right there in the lobby. She on big body, I'm riding big body. She got a big body, she riding me properly. I hit it twice and she ready to die for me. I switch it up just to break the monotony. My whole life you told me I had trust issues. Looked at her, said nah bitch, I got us issues. Meet and greet me, my demands can't build less. We building a brand, I'm going all money in with my bros like I'm nipping Black Sam. Back the fuck back, you in my entrance. They try to count me out, came to their senses. Yeah, you off, get you going. Solid trap being into it, nothing offensive. It's good, like, that's a clean, good, clean, wholesome trap, as we like to say on Audio Face. Even Don Life with Lil Wayne, I thought was pretty good.
I really like that.
Because Lil Wayne's, like, the Carter 5 was interesting. There is some really good songs in there, some other ones I didn't like, and some of his features have been hit or miss this
year. I think a lot of Lil Wayne is, like, he can do a lot of really good hit songs, but it's just, like, very inconsistent. A lot of his albums are filler.
Exactly. But that was a really good feature. They got Friday Night Cypher, which is just, you know, 10-minute long. Yeah. And there's just a lot going on in that song.
I mean, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty cool. You got a lot of good spitting on there. Eminem just kind of just like kills it at the end. But yeah, it's really awesome. It's just, I think it's just meant to be a showcase for Midwest Detroit-ish.
It's really good. Very good album. I was pleasantly surprised. I heard a couple of the songs like Why Would I Stop and The Baddest at Work already, because we play those at the gym. And I'm like, I looked at it, I go, oh, I didn't realize Big Sean released an album. I'm like, these are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Considering. And then when we listen to the album, I go, oh, this actually top to bottom, it's a solid album. It's very good.
I think it's the most, like, as far as new albums that have come out that play with the new school of rap and the old school of rap, it's the best execution of that to come out this year pretty evenly. I can't think of anything else that has had this balance.
Does it have a balance?
It's either too old head or way too much, like, you know, like a Gunna copy.
Yeah. It's a very good album.
And it's thoughtfully produced, so we're gonna absolutely love that. The arbitrary scale this week is has to do with Lindsey Graham's spine. Lindsey Graham, of course, a senator who, in 2016, when there was a Supreme Court justice seat opening,
when Scalia passed away,
yes, promised that said, look, listen, it's an election year, so we would never elect a new Supreme Court justice in an election year or try to nominate one. So we're not going to do that. In fact, you know what? Hold me to these words. In 4 years, if there is a Republican president and a Supreme Court justice, God forbid, dies, and it is an opportunity for me to nominate a new one, I promise you, I will not nominate a new one.
Play the fucking tape.
The floor is yours, Lindsey Graham. So we're going to be looking at the different parts of the spine, which parts are most likely to crack when Donald Trump so much as breathes over in his direction. But of course, different parts of the spine, whichever the most like weaker parts are the weaker things. So the stronger parts of the spine is better.
This is a solid like lumbar spine. Like
this is the lumbar spine. It's lumbar, the lower part.
So it's like this is what. All right. So it's a solid lumbar because you either have a really nice car or a really shitty car. Like you're gonna have either like my car, where you have like four different adjustments of your lumbar support,
and
you're like,
back,
good, or you're in that haunt like. A 1991 Honda that has no, like, has like one thing of the lumbar support that like either breaks your back or you get your back sucked.
No, I think you're talking about like early 90s Ford bucket seats that were in the pickup.
Oh,
trucks.
There we go. Yeah, the middle seat that like doesn't have a seatbelt and you just get yeeted out of the.
Yeah, the middle seat that actually you can just like knock on it and there's just a problem. Yeah,
the solid lumbar though.
I'm gonna give this the vertebral body. Because this is connected to the brain. There's a lot of heady thoughts, heady emotions. It's a really good thing in here. I think there was a little bit of filler in this album. Like, I didn't need Zen the fuck out. I didn't need some of the things that are... Some of the songs in here that Big Sean is only on and maybe one or two of the features aren't needed on here. In fact, I'd say the songs that Big Sean is on single here are mostly the filler ones.
Right.
It's not that he's a bad rapper. In fact, he's a great rapper. So it's the kind of stealth filler, if it makes sense. But overall, definitely, that could be missing. If this was a 45-minute long album, I'd say 55 minutes, even with the cipher, it would be just that much better.
For sure.
Moving on. Lady A, it appears, has filed a countersuit against the band formerly known as Lady Antebellum. So we talked about this earlier, how during the whole Black Lives Matter things, Lady Antebellum, or the George Floyd demonstrations more specifically in May 2020, Lady Antebellum, the country music performing artist band, decided, Antebellum, apparently a lot of people don't like that time period in history, especially Black people, so we should change our name to Lady A now. Oops, too bad we didn't do even like 5 seconds of Googling to find out there's already a Black woman who's a soul singer who's named Lady A. They go into a back and forth over who gets the name, which is the dumbest back and forth ever, because one person had it first and the other person tried to appropriate it while not seeming racist, all while stealing it from a Black person, making themselves look very racist. And now it looks like Lady A has decided to countersue the original Lady Antebellum.
It's just so dirty. It's a bad back and forth where I guess negotiations like fell down, or initial discussions broke down because Anita White was asking for $10 million compensation, and she said, and to use for Antebellum to use Lady A, which I think is fair because she said that she was going to donate half of it to BLM groups and then the other half to like basically completely redo her life
and rebrand it. Like there are rebranding costs, and if you're gonna so much as like change your logo, like Verizon Wireless deciding to like flatten their check mark, that's millions and millions of dollars and just like changing the look everywhere. Especially if you're gonna change your name and make sure that people understand old equals new. That's very hard because unfortunately, like people don't think about this, but when you do rebrand, you could lose a lot of your audience because they just don't know how to find you.
Yeah.
looks at the OCs / OCS / the OCs.
Worst band name ever.
They've come out with like 6 albums.
Yeah, I know. I actually was funny. I looked at their stuff earlier in the year, maybe like May or June. I'm like, oh my god, they're still making music. Like, and I was like, that's like 4 extra albums. Yeah, no, we're not doing that. But anyways, so just, she's countersuing because she's like, okay, yeah, this is kind of bullshit because it's my brand. I've used it for 20 years. I'm proud of what I've done. And she said that this is too much right now. They're using the name because of the BLM incident for that. And for them, it's just a moment in time. If it mattered and it would matter to them before, it shouldn't have taken George Floyd to die for them to realize that their name has a slave reference to it because it's about the fuck, like, antebellum period is the period when...
Before, it's antebellum literally means, like, before the Civil War.
War, yes.
So, what was happening before the Civil War? Slavery. So, it's definitely a vibe there.
It's like if I name my band Nazi Germany.
Yeah, it's like, if you named your band the Blitzkrieg and you decided to go on tour throughout, like, Central England, like it's just not the vibe.
I mean, it'd be more like Poland, but you know,
we now get into trolling that I wish I could be more okay with, but
this is just funny.
A transgender metalhead Satanist has won the Republican nomination for county sheriff over in I have to find where exactly. Oh, this is in Keene, New Hampshire. I knew this was in kind of like the northeast part of the country. But basically, Araya DeMesso earned 4,211 votes from registered Republicans in a primary that was held just this past Tuesday. She ran unopposed, and she still has to compete in the general election against an incumbent Democrat.
Yeah.
But the reason she got registered Republicans to vote for her is because no one pays attention to these like primary vote type things.
And they just
like
vote. She's an actual libertarian.
Yeah, she's a libertarian. So like, not quite Republican. I wish she was like some far left Marxist and she'd like go wild.
I wish. But that would have been hilarious.
She's a libertarian, which is like a separate thing.
Separate but equal.
I would need to actually start a new podcast just to go into all that.
Seriously, to explain that.
But while DeMezzo is seeking the county sheriff position, she's running on the slogan of fuck the police. I'm running for, she said, I'm running for sheriff because I oppose the very system, and that sheriff, and the sheriff has the most hands-on ability in Cheshire County to oppose that system. The system that let you down by allowing me, the freaking transsexual Satanist anarchist, be your sheriff candidate is the same system I'm attacking. So again, like,
that's hilarious.
I'm guessing she just doesn't know all the details about libertarianism because they're just some like basic things that go against the existence of being transgender in the United States. But this sounds very hard. And
she did. It's funny because she's like, yeah, I put my name, not thinking much, but this just shows you that the people who are voting just literally vote for whatever candidate they see as Republican without doing any other background. But she's like, I don't think half these people would have voted for me if they see who I actually am.
Oh, no, like 80% of those people wouldn't have voted for
me. So funny.
Yeah, that's just how it goes in America. It's not just a Republican thing. People just like vote split ticket for whoever has that by their name. They just at least have some logic before it, if you do that. At least know what you're doing if you do that.
Yes. And onto our last album review, we have
American Head
by the Flaming Lips. Yes. It is 13 songs, 50 minutes long. Their first album in a long while.
I mean, like, so the 2010s with the Flaming Lips, because the Flaming Lips are a very storied psychedelic rock group. The 2010s of the Flaming Lips were kind of just like a bunch of fairly indulgent, weird, off the wall recordings and re-recordings and re-releases and covers and things like that.
Exactly.
That a pretty good discography, if I can remember.
From the 90s.
From the 90s and the aughts and things like that. Even going backwards a little more, but they have come back with another album, American Head, to kind of see if they can still have, after all of this time, the chops to do like a really properly good psychedelic rock outfit kind of thing. And, yeah, it's psychedelic, it's very trippy, it's very weird, it's hitting on some sort of it's hitting on some sort of typical sort of like buttons you would press in a psychedelic album, so it's not really
there's two songs back together saying, at the movies on Quaaludes, a mother of taking LSD, also where have you got Quaaludes from, my dog? But anyways, that's the second story, that's a story for another time.
Yeah, a lot of the album, it feels like how many albums have there been made about acid trips more broadly? It's like, oh, there's the weird thing. Oh, you're kind of having this weird flip of reality.
The problem is the really good psychedelic rock, like you have Tame Impala. So like the bar is set so high for a bunch of, not just him, but a bunch of other bands and stuff that have been doing work for ages. Like a lot of indie bands and stuff that have been doing stuff. Even Dive, some of their side projects are
psychedelic. The torch has been carried and moved forward.
And they're very different and I like that sound a lot more. And this is the first four or five songs were very uninspired to me, especially the opening track for sure. I did not like the opening track at all. Will You Return / When You Come Down? I think because the vocals are already off tune, and it's something that bothers me a lot. And it's just very slow, nothing like really too much substance in it. Watching the Light Bugs Grow, it started to get a little bit better, but it set the wrong foot like bad. It was a really poor opening track too. I wish they would have put something at one of the songs in the middle or towards the end out on the front, and I think it would have set a better tone for it.
Yeah.
And there's some decent stuff in here. I mean, Brother Eyes, okay, you and me selling weed. When We Die, When We're High, those are decent songs.
Brother Eyes kind of like a slower, but like there's emotion and the balladness of like how it's constructed. Like I even kind of feel some like acoustic strumming and with it in the middle. It's a very interesting kind of perception with it. And I guess like continuing the acid nature of it, it's like the middle of the trip. But it's, I guess, very much like, okay, we've seen this done many times over and done in many kind of ways and attempted many kind of ways. It just doesn't feel new or fresh or necessarily exciting. I just want to go back and listen to those old examples of this being done really well, like Pink Floyd.
Exactly, yeah. And there's a lot of other stuff that's gone on within music that's just pushing forward, and this is just super stagnant, and the entire fucking album is just about drugs. Like, okay, can you do something more? Like, there's a lot more. With some psychedelic artists, they obviously put stuff in there within drugs, but then there's other stuff about it other than just that. So that was my theme, was just it kept going on and on and on after a while. So just, it's very uninspired to me, which is a little disappointing because some of the early work was pretty good. I really like Yoshimi Battles and Battles of Pink Robots. Fantastic album. There's a lot of good songs in there. I think that was, what, 01, 02 or something like that? Because I remember listening to it as a kid. Yeah. And I still like listen to that occasionally, and some of those tracks will pop up on playlists and stuff, and I do enjoy it. And some of the older work in the 90s and stuff as well is fantastic, but this is definitely not a Doves of, like, we haven't released an album over 10 years and they still release a banger. Like, this is not good.
Yeah. There's, like, again, a couple of flashpoints where, like, you'd think you might see some kind of genius, like you mentioned Assassins of Youth. With around there, even then, it's like they're trying to mix the synthesizers and mm-hmm. do this like 2010 sort of psychedelic stuff. And it's like, yo, sorry, like Tame Impala 2013 had you covered.
Exactly.
Like, we're good.
Like
Tame Impala again, like I had my sort of like with it because I think he's branched even beyond psychedelic rock as a focal point. Like he references it, but that was more of his earlier
stuff. No, I'm talking about his early work. I'm not talking about his stuff now. I'm saying he did that in his first album in like 2010, 2011.
Yes, yes.
So I'm saying that plus so many other indie artists who already branched off from it as well. Like, they already had their thing, they've done it, and done it 1,000 times better. So.
Yeah. The feature with Casey Musgraves also in here is like, fine, not forgettable.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, it's a letdown to me. I was expecting a little bit more. I didn't just want like one giant acid trip. It's all right, but in 2020, there's so much good shit being released right now. It's not. It's nowhere near enough of what you need to do. So,
yeah, definitely have higher expectations not being met. We're gonna get railed by all the Flaming Lips lovers on YouTube who watch this review, though. Whatever.
I don't care because I already made my point with the Psychedelic Furs, who made a good album. Anyways,
is it gonna be the interlocking facets of Lindsey Graham's spine? They're in between the main parts of the spinal bone to kind of connect the two together. But I think it's just like these weak little parts of calcium that you'd like Chick-fil-A fat that would like get stuck between the, like, at the grease trap at the bottom where they capture all the hatred and racism from the French fries they cook. It's probably something that could be melted in that kind of.
This is one of your discs that like completely slips out sideways, and you're just like, fuck, and you just like slowly melt to the side. They can't fix it, so they put you up, and you permanently have scoliosis because you have a slipped disc. Because you were like, you're trying to find that last parking spot at Walmart, and you turned in a little too quickly, and then you got an accident because of it, and then you just like disc it out.
You're trying to do a TikTok dance at TikTok Walmart Oracle, and while you're in the middle of the parking lot. To unlock your Fortnite, Fortnite burger.
Oh, stop! Oh, just no. Moving on. All right, this
too much 2020. All right,
we're going on to Westworld, people. Have you found Arnold yet?
I never thought I'd find Sean running gleefully into the Kanye West.
Yeah,
segment,
out of that. We're going into the Kanye segment. So. Story one: he pisses on the Grammy Award during his latest tweet storm and videotapes it wearing his like. Random boat Yeezus shoes, whatever the fuck those things are called. And it's, by the way, that part, hilarious.
Yeah, I will
because
say...
Because fuck the Grammys.
Yeah, I will say, yeah, fuck the Grammys. It's kind of like the genesis of Audioface itself and the Audioface Awards, which are coming later this year. The video of him pissing on the Grammy is just hilarious content. I used the shit out of that with that photo of Drake also drinking from a Grammy. Just juxtaposing those two together. There's a lot to be analyzed from that image that I did not do the analyzation work of. But this was also in the middle of him releasing this like tweet storm about all of his contracts and this like war with Masters, which we'll get to in a moment.
And then my favorite tweet I've seen all year is, Kanye, I'm just going to read this. I am the head of Adidas. I will bring Adidas and Puma back together and bring me and Jay back together. All Puma's designs are embarrassingly trash, but I will personally design Puma's and Adidas and make everything okay. Beautiful. Poet. I just want him to march into Germany. I forget where Adidas is headquartered in Germany. And just go up to the German boards and just slam it down. Be like, ich bin die König jetzt. And just like watch them all sit down and just start clapping.
Stop. My company now.
look at me. Look at me. My company now. I mean, he has a point with Puma because Puma is absolute ass, except they do make good Formula One stuff and they like partner with Ferrari. So that's kind of cool. But like their football cleats are shit. Like Neymar's boots are just all black and just standing there. I'm like, that's really boring. The only time they ever made cool cleats for footballers was when they made those two like cotton candy shoes, but all they did was make a pink boot and a blue boot. That's it. Like, how cool are you?
You're going to love this aspect. Adidas can be found at Adidaslerstrasse in...
That's hilarious.
Herzgenaurach, Germany, over in Bavaria.
It says that's in Bayern. Yeah.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yes.
That's hilarious.
That's a fun little thing from Kanye West there.
Can and now we're going now? On to the actual substance, though.
Now to the meat and potatoes in this. Because we've always said that Kanye West is currently going through a very public mental health episode that the people around him and his loved ones don't care to really fix.
Yo, and now he's doing the whole Lil Wayne of, I'm being held hostage by my contracts.
Yes, which happens a lot in the music
which
industry.
Happens so like a shit ton.
We have to read into it and really kind of get to the substance of it because... Yeah, a lot of people are going to cover Kanye West, the spectacle, the craziness he released, his Def Jam contract, like page by page by page. Sorry, it was Universal Music and Sony ATV. He released those contracts page by page by page over a bunch of tweets. And he's going on this warpath saying that like artists don't own their masters. They can't pass the wealth that their masters create to their kids, masters being the primary recordings of the music, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, Killer Mike.
He's not trying to kill your masters, he's trying to save the masters. But anyways, this is a really
To me, like, some of the things he said were just hilarious, because he said, I'm not putting out no more music until I'm done with my contract with Sony Universal. On God, in Jesus' name, come and get me. And he said, I'm Nat Turner, I'm fighting for us. I'm not industry, bro. I don't care. I'm in service to Christ. We need world healing. I miss my brothers. I refuse to argue with black men on labels we don't own, even Twitter. The fact that he said, I'm Nat Turner, like, bro, you said slavery sounds like a choice to me. You're not even close to being Nat Turner. Go, like, find a railroad and just lay there for a little bit, my guy. Like, Jesus
Christ.
I'm
the ghetto Oprah.
He also did say, I'm the ghetto Oprah, but you're nowhere close to being Nat Turner. National fucking hero.
There was an article by Noah Yu in Pitchfork, and it's Pitchfork, but I think Noah did a pretty good job in this describing this article itself to kind of like describe the contracts of the context of there are these really ridiculous contracts that artists can enter the record label.
That's what record labels suck ass.
Let's add some context to this. So again, quoting Noah Yu at Pitchfork. Under the rules laid out in the 1976 Copyright Act, artists can reclaim their master recordings from a label 35 years after a given record's release.
That's why like the Beatles stuff went on sale about a decade ago and stuff because of that.
This means that West could legally start trying to win ownership of the masters of his solo albums, beginning with The College Dropout in 2039. Jesus. Though, as a major label executive admitted to Billboard in 2017, quote, we are not in the business of giving our masters back to artists. So that's just on there. None of these record labels want artists to have their masters because that defeats the common purpose of record labels. And there's some of the reason for the record labels to do that. They're fronting money. They're essentially giving artists loans to make music. And so they want some like collateral back. Anyways, among the leaked documents is a 2012 profit share agreement that contains something called a reversion clause, which states that the rights for Yeezus and the Life of Pablo will revert to West just 20 years after each release, in 2033 and 2036 respectively, as long as he has recouped the recording costs by that time. Other documents reveal West received a $20 million advance for Yeezus, $4 million for recording costs, and $6 million for The Life of Pablo, with $3 million for recording costs. So basically, Kanye West has a deal that a lot of people in the music industry don't even have, where some of his albums, he gets to start to argue for those masters or fight for those masters earlier than most artists can even dream of hoping for. And you only get those kinds of, what are they called, reversion clauses, if you have a lot of leverage with the label. Exactly. Kanye West can do that. Jay-Z can do that. Almost any other artist can.
Yeah, exactly. Drake could probably do that as well. Any of the big top 10 artists in the world can do that, but most other ones, there's no way they're like, good try, kid.
And it's like, what can they do? They have the right to beg for the right to the original recordings to the music that they
20 years later.
Maybe in 20 years.
It's so stupid. So, by the way, one tweet he said, I'm not going to watch my people be enslaved. I'm putting my life on the line for my people. The music industry and the NBA are modern day slave ships. I'm the new Moses. Again, he did say, slavery sounds like a choice to me, so take it with a grain of salt. But he is right about the music industry in some regards, for sure, because how many times have we said or pointed out shitty things that record labels have been doing to artists? It's ridiculous. I mean, there is a line in one of the Big Sean's songs where it's like, we do music for 20 cents a song or something like that. Yeah. I'm like, that's hilarious.
It's true. Sad, but true. To get a last little bit of perspective, music copyright lawyer Lisa Alter said, on the one hand, he's pointing a finger at an industry in which the balance of power has been dramatically skewed in the favor of the label as opposed to the artist. And there's no question about that.
For sure.
But the manner in which he did it and choosing his own contract as the example is really where the message gets diluted. Because Kanye West, while arguing for this, is like in a really favorable position. That's really kind of most we can say. But really what the matter is, if he is making this larger effort for like artists to own more of their work and own more of the rights and do more of that, sure, I guess. But that's kind of just another one of, I guess you could say Kanye West also cares about morals because he doesn't want his kids to like be shown too much in the Kardashian world. Like, okay, like you can pick out all these different bits and pieces of Kanye West thing, but the truth is, he's having a mental breakdown in an episode in public, and no one's really willing to do with that. And what's going to go about it? Because that's what we do in America. We just like slowly watch the cars crash.
So many people around him, like, dude's begging for help. It's hilarious.
Yeah. It's hilarious in like a dramatic, terrible, like,
yeah, exactly.
Can't believe it's happening way. But that is Westworld. Again, we'll continue to cover it as it pertains to the most like relevant things in music. But someone please get Kanye help.
And now we're going to move on to a segment we haven't done in a while.
Music recommendations. We last did these in April.
April.
So it's been a minute, and there's definitely many we could put on here that have come out this year. That's what the court packing episode is for. Court packing, Democrats, look into it. And we'll talk about more of those things that we may have missed over.
Where's your spine, Nancy? So
what's your first one, Sean?
My first one's Emotional Oranges. Yeah, that's a really random name. They're an R&B duo and they go fucking hard. I believe the girl vocalist, she is the vocal coach for Adele, and the male, he is the vocal coach for Drake, I believe. So they're both in the industry and stuff in general, and they try to be hidden and try to be like just normal people making R&B, and fucking A, it's really good. They have two albums out, The Juice Volume 1 and The Juice Volume 2, which is great names. I love it.
One might even say The Juice is loose.
Exactly. So their first album, though, Volume 1, is very good. And Volume 2 isn't bad itself, but Volume 1 is like where it's at. Definitely listen to it top to bottom. You have Motion, it starts off, and it's just this beautiful R&B. The beats go hard throughout pretty much every song in here. There's a couple of my favorites. Motion, Someone Else is definitely my favorite, for sure, within them. I've had that song on repeat a lot. By the way, both those albums were released last year. So they're pretty new. Caesar of We Made a Podcast showed me Emotional Oranges. Hmm. There's a couple other ones. Unless You're Drowning is good. Corners of My Mind is also good. But it's just the production is clean, crisp, wholesome. It's just fantastic work, top and bottom, that they've done. Their voices are very good together. Like, you could just hear it going back and forth. This beautiful duets going out through it. You have some other ones that are really deep and personal. Other ones that are just fun and just like getting up onto it. Very, very good music. And like, R&B is interesting because
you don't like R&B that much.
I don't. I'm not too big of a fan of it. But this is like, this is the creme de whatever the fuck it's called, because I can't speak French.
Cream of the cream.
Exactly.
Well, as the French.
This is café and kuchen. Okay, it's like right. This is how good it is.
It's good. It's good. Mm-hmm. Cream of the crop. Whatever.
There we go.
My recommendation is, if you're like a music super nerd, you're not going to be surprised by this one. But it's 100 Gex.
I swear I've heard them before. Maybe. So
100 Gex are one of. They'd be in that category of like hyper pop or industrial pop that we've described.
That's right. There we go. Okay.
Their album, 1000 Gex, really got. They released in 2019 and really got popular in 2020, almost as a meme. In 2020, 1000 Gex and the Tree of Clues, which was like a huge remix album, was released. And that was kind of helping it get even more attention up in the mainstream. The songs are really crazy. Like, it's pop taken to its, like a lot of hyperpop is, it's pop taken to its ridiculous extreme. Oftentimes playing with the motifs of pop, where it's usually be 4-4 beats, making them way too bubblegum, way too insane. And then at that most insane point, making it almost like industrial EDM, or not quite house, but just like really break down beats that are just like insane. Crazy rave stuff. Yeah. Like, basically blurring the lines between pop and trance music, for sure.
So it's like Sophie time, like Sophie just turned up quicker.
Yeah, Sophie turned up higher, faster paced. Their album 1000 Gex is a whopping 23 minutes long. So it's very short, very quick, a lot of random shit happening at you. I think the ones you would ease yourself into would be like a song like Ringtone, where it's just a basic sort of like girl, boy, teenage love song,
okay.
But then it has that kind of deconstruction that you would get in a hyper pop song.
My boy's got his own ringtone. It's the only one I know, it's the only one I know. My boy's got his own ringtone. It's the only one I know, it's the only one I know. My boy's got his own ringtone. It's the only one I know, it's the only one I know. My boy's got his own ringtone. It's the only one I know, it's the only one I answer.
And then if you survive that, there's a song after that called Gek Gek Gek, which is just like, you're really going deep. You're going deep bass hipster in that. Deep state hipster in that.
Whoop, whoop. All right. My second one is I Don't Know How, But They Found Me. They also shortened their name to IDK How. I actually saw them. I've heard their song Choke. It's kind of a popular tune. It's, by the way, they're like the Black Keys, which is just a two-man group. And one's on drums. The other one is a guitarist and vocals, except the drums isn't doing the vocals for it. But anyways. So I saw them open for the 1975 in San Diego, and they were one of my favorite random live bands I've seen ever, because their live presence was fantastic. Like, the interactions and stuff that they did were great, and their music in general was fantastic. Choke is like their song that a couple people listening here will probably know it. I've ran across it randomly before too, before getting into them. They have, I don't think they've really made an album. It's just all been like EPs and singles. Because originally when they started out a few years ago in the early 2010s, I think maybe 2016, 17, they were like straight Daft Punk, where no one knew who they were. And they were trying to just keep it small and secret. And then they were like, people were like, you make really good music. So then they actually started touring and doing other stuff last year. And they have some good stuff. 1981 Extended Play, which is their one EP. which has Choke on it, Social Climb, Do It All the Time are fantastic songs. It's this bridge of like mixing Franz Ferdinand with, I don't know, insert pop indie band. So it's like blurring lines of like normal alternative with pop indie.
Okay.
If that makes sense, which is a line that you can cross and make it annoying, or you can do it and make it good, which is obviously they do it in the good way, because when I first heard them, I was like, okay, like live, they were playing, I'm like, oh, this is interesting, because I would normally not like this style of music, but they, their production of it and their style of how they do it is very good. So I like it.
I'll check them out. I'm very much interested in that like line of indie pop and alternative pop, because that'll also kind of lead into my next one. Usually Sean's the one coming in with very obscure Nordic European sounding alternative bands.
Oh shit, here
Check
we go.
Check it out with The Doe, The Do, something like that, I don't know. It's an O with an cross in between it. But The Do, they're a Finnish-French pop band, and they sound a lot like Franz, not a lot like Franz Ferdinand, but I'd say like Franz Ferdinand and like Phoenix around Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix kind of time.
Ooh, some of my favorite shit.
Very interesting, like, electronic kind of...
I wonder if they're going to make an album.
Alternative electronic kind of stuff. Shake Shook Shaken is their more recent album from 2015. Very good stuff, but they're one of those bands where, like, their recorded work is very good, and it goes back to about 2008, 2009. But where they really shine is their live stuff. And thankfully, they put a lot of their live stuff up very well. So they have a live album, Live at Olympia Paris, and... this is how I was introduced to The Doe, and I think they sound really amazing. They get really experimental live, again, with building up with their sound. Because it can almost sound like, yeah, like Franz Ferdinand or Phoenix, or maybe even like Porches from earlier that era back then. But live, it gets really experimental. It almost sounds like Mike Snow and Fantagram added within to that. My favorite song live of theirs is Opposite Ways. It's just like... chiptune, but there's also this pop ballad aspect to it, while you have the synthesizers raying back and forth around in a way that's, you know, just really fun and glamorous. It's nice and a little bit disorienting at the same time. I don't know. It's just one of those things you really gotta definitely listen to.
French and Finnish.
But,
interesting.
Yes, a little bit of a background with the combination, but more on that. Never. The best Opposite Ways, like I said, the live version of that is really good. The Live at Olympia Paris version is mostly them doing a live version of the album Shake Shook Shaken. So if you start with an album thing of that and want to listen to a regular album as it should play, then that's the one I would go to. Opposite Ways is also on that one. But yeah, they really kill it live. They're really interesting. As far as one of my like palate cleanser kind of musicians that I want to have, this is one of those. For when I'm in the middle of an audio phase reviewing week and want to listen to something just like totally different, preparing for something else. This one does really good ones.
Yeah. This has been Audio Face.
This has been Audio Face. Nice to have you with those music recommendations out there and reviewing some of the more notable albums of September. September's pretty much over with this one. There's going to be one more like thing or like thing we have this month. We have Fleet Foxes, Sufjan Stevens, and Deftones next week. This will also be really interesting. I don't even know what face you're making there, Sean.
Because Fleet Foxes, you know how much I like Fleet Foxes.
That's what I thought. So that should be an interesting next week. And then next month, I'm still planning out how October is going to look. But like we said, we'll have a Biba Doobie bonus episode because that'll be brand new. Sean will get to inform us about Biba Doobie and we'll get the information about that because her album will be coming out in mid-October. We'll have a Gorillaz bonus re-release kind of episode like we did with Beck a little while ago because Gorillaz is coming with an album in
should
October.
No, we're already doing different retrospective episodes. That's fine.
Yeah, we can also talk about this once we've actually fully played out. But anyways, That is Audio Face. We've got a lot coming up in October and the months ahead, so make sure you subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts, and you follow us at the places Sean's about to describe.
Follow the podcast at Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me at SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Dan from at Dan from the web on Twitter and Dan from the internet on Instagram. You can follow us on YouTube at youtube.audioface.show, where Dan's been posting clips and comment on them. Some of our things have gone over 1,000 views, and the comment sections are just churning in there.
Wild.
Hilarious. Especially the Bane's World video. Oh my god, I love like scrolling through there. I'm like,
wild.
Ooh, people saying some shit, and I love it.
We have a responsibility here on Audio Face Podcast, so we hold that well. And also, we appreciate that you listen to this podcast and continue coming back next week.
Yeah.
As we will. So take care. Have enjoyed.
Bye.